Hello and welcome to another episode of Transmission. Today we're joined by Killian from Akina Clean Energy. And Killian is the Director of Investment Management in Battery Storage and has deep experience in bringing forward battery storage in Europe. This conversation covers the history of investing in European battery storage, from 4-hour systems in Belgium to Germany, Italy, Iberia, Greece, and the Baltics. We cover the biggest challenges and opportunities in each market in Europe, as well as covering some of the critical changes that are happening, things like harmonization, but also co-location across those markets. For anyone interested in European BESS, they're going to find Killian's expertise and insights super useful. And with that, let's jump in. Hello, Killian. Welcome to Transmission.
Thanks for the invitation, Ed. Great to be here.
Okay, so let's get straight into this. I would love to know a little bit more about you and your context within the energy space.
So I'm a director for batteries at Akida Clean Energy. We are an IPP and developer for renewables and batteries working across Europe, but also in APAC. I joined the company 5 years ago to build up the battery portfolio. We have now 7 gigawatt of portfolio across 9 European countries, continental Europe. And before that, in my earlier career, I was working in trading. So for many years, I've been working at the trading desk, trading coal, electricity, gas, EUAs. And later, I was heading the business development and strategy of a large European utility.
And just to kind of pick up on that 7 gig, so to help people understand by region where that 7 gigs is located, how is that kind of, how is that spread across markets?
So we started out, our first battery project was in Benelux. We acquired that in 2021, and that has been operational since 2 years now. It's been one of the first 4-hour assets in continental Europe, 25 megawatts. So for today's standards, not huge, but at that time, it was one of the larger assets, certainly for the continent. And then we have a very mature German pipeline where we are currently constructing 2 projects. We're also constructing a project in Finland currently. And then we have large pipelines in Italy, in Iberia, in Greece. So these are the main markets. And then we are also active in certain niches. So we have a Swiss project, but also something in the Baltics.
Okay, so pretty broad, a pretty broad mix. And if I kind of was to go over those markets, so am I right in saying that Germany is probably one of the largest markets?
Yeah, certainly. So in Germany, we have 1.2 gigawatt of project portfolio split across DSO, where most of our late stage projects are. But then also now we started doing the larger TSO connected projects.
Okay. And maybe just to go back to Benelux, actually. So that's 25 megawatts at 4 hours. That's pretty unusual, actually, to be looking at 4 hours back in 2021. What was the reasoning that kind of got you to that point?
So Belgium has a capacity market, and that capacity market at that time had a slight tendency for the 4-hour duration. Also, it's a very energy heavy market, so the battery is really used for cycling across AFRR, but also imbalance. So the Belgian market is very particular because it has a very volatile imbalance market that is in real time used for the optimization of the battery. And that is something that the battery can do very well. Nowadays, we are also developing 2-hour batteries in Belgium, but at that time, the tendency was slightly in favor of the 4-hour.
Okay, really interesting to kind of hear that. And I suppose a lot of our listeners might be in the US or UK or potentially in Australia. AFRR, what does that stand for? What is that as a service?
That's the secondary reserve. So that's basically the ancillary services from the TSOs that is used for the slightly slower response time after the primary reserve. And it stands for automated frequency restoration reserve. So right. It's basically automatically activated by the TSOs.
And now I think let's move into the first kind of topic that we want to really cover, which is how does Aquila think about these markets? So you're active in a lot of markets. How do you assess the attractiveness of different markets?
So when we started in 2020, looking at batteries and Aquila, we have been doing renewables for over 15 years. We started 2020 with batteries. It was very early stage, right? UK was starting to pick up. The activity increased quite a bit there, but on the continent, it was still very early. And most people said that you will not have the same development as in the UK because you have a large interconnected European grid and hence you do not need such a flexibility like an island market in the UK, right? I mean, in retrospect, obviously we can now say that this has probably not been proven true, and we expected that that early on that there will be a similar need for short-term flexibility also on the continent. So and now markets like Germany, like Italy, are obviously extremely active, right? I would potentially even say a bit more active than the UK at this stage. And when we started, we basically looked at the different European markets where we partly had already renewable activities, but also markets that we entered just from the battery side, like, for example, Belgium. And we looked at, okay, where do we have the renewable build out and where do we have the fossil decommissioning? And these two factors are driving to a large extent the need for batteries. And we see that the individual setup of each market differs slightly across the various European markets, but there is a trend towards harmonization of the markets. And in the end, when you have this drive for renewables, you end up with a certain level of short-term volatility, and this requires the existence of this flexibility asset. And then it doesn't depend so much whether this flexibility is then covered via ancillary services or via wholesale markets. And we see different approaches here, and or Italy, which takes a completely different approach in terms of how batteries are incentivized. But as long as you have this build out of renewables, you then also have this need for the connected flexibility. And that is what is driving the opportunities across Europe, because this drive for renewables is something you see from the Nordics over Central Europe, and then obviously also in the big PV markets in Southern Europe, right? Italy, Portugal, Spain.
Yes. Yeah, agreed. I actually had forgotten about that. Definitely. I remember now 2020, 2021 conversations about how interconnected Europe was and how limited storage was going to be. That was definitely a thing that definitely happened.
Exactly.
Lost to time. But it definitely did exist for a time. So building on from the interconnection side, so the two key parts of the RES build out, which you kind of highlighted, brings through like certain sort of price dynamics. So overgeneration, let's say, for low price charging opportunities, but also on the fossil decommissioning side, have you looked at some of the old fossil sites that have been decommissioned? Have you ever looked at some of those and said, ah, that site, we'd be interested to use some of the existing grid infrastructure to develop around those projects?
Or
yes. Okay.
So actually, the project in Belgium that I just mentioned, that is the site of a former coal plant, and the coal plant has been teared down and then basically the batteries erected upon it. That's makes a lot of sense because you have the grid infrastructure already there. You have the transformers often already there. You have already the injection capacity at that specific grid node. Not always the import capacity to charge the batteries. That is something that that can be tricky in this location sometimes. But yes, we have done it. However, it's difficult to scale because obviously that is something that is often dominated by the incumbent players that that have these former sites and that are reutilizing them for new projects.
So they hold the site, they hold the land, and if they want to, they could kind of step in and develop that. So So you'd have to kind of acquire it from them and then develop it. Okay. But as a business case, I think it's kind of super interesting because it really is kind of just making the most of the transmission capacity.
Absolutely.
That we have.
And it's a similar logic in the end, like the co-location, mm-hmm. The co-location with renewables.
Yes. Yeah, and so maybe a nice sort of foreshadowing to where we're going later on in this conversation. but let's first talk a little bit about regulation. So you obviously see a lot of markets and you've brought forward projects in a lot of regions. How does the regulation differ from region to region? And I think perhaps that builds on a little bit of what you were saying at the end about that sort of the harmonization of markets as well. So how different are these regions?
If you look at the big picture, they look quite different. So you have markets like Italy, which are dominated by long-term contracts. On the one hand, the capacity market, but then also the so-called MACSE auction, which gives a 15-year contract, basically fully contracted revenues for a battery. And then you have other markets like Germany, but also like the Benelux, which are very wholesale driven. So driven by either imbalance or in the case of Germany, the continuous intraday market, which allows close to real-time optimization of the battery. Mm-hmm. And then you have markets which still have a large share of ancillary services. One example of this is Nordics, but also in Iberia, the AFRR that I already mentioned is something that is still dominating these revenue mixes. But what we are seeing as a trend is wholesale anyway is something that is already pretty harmonized across Europe. So you have the big exchange, the EPEX, which is covering most of the regions, not all of yet. So for example, not Italy yet and also not Spain yet, where you have local pools. But wholesale is something which is fairly standard across continental Europe. And then you have the ancillary services, which were until recently not very harmonized, but the EU has implemented certain harmonization initiatives like Picasso, which is, for example, it's a name of the initiative from the EU and which plans to harmonize the secondary reserve markets, so the AFRR markets across Europe. So also these markets are getting more similar across the different countries. But you still have, and I expect this to continue for some time, local incentives in each region, in each country.
Yeah. We just ran through kind of the different types of market design. So we talked about Italy with the MACSE, Benelux, Germany, Iberia, which is kind of a description of how each of those markets has its own form of regulation, but then how Picasso is kind of harmonizing parts of that, particularly on AFRR. But we haven't gone into the challenges. So within each of these types of regulation, as someone who wants to develop and invest in these projects, which of these kind of regulatory regimes is particularly challenging to you and kind of what is particularly appealing?
Yeah, let's start maybe with the ones that is really appealing. So we see big opportunities in Germany. We also like Italy, even though the two setups are quite different. And also we see very big potential in Iberia, so both Portugal and Spain. What we like is markets where you have a large share of wholesale optimization revenues. So like the German market, which is really driven by the continuous intraday market, where you can optimize in 15-minute granularity, really up to 5 minutes before delivery, the battery. And this market is used a lot by renewable players across Germany to optimize their imbalance position. And hence it sees a very high level of volatility, which is perfect for battery optimization. That brings the benefit of reduced cannibalization risk, right? So other markets which are more dominated by ancillary services, Nordics is one example, but also Iberia, which is still dominated at the moment by secondary reserves, so AFRR. Also there are obviously cannibalization risk, and for a larger of deployment, you would need then also an active wholesale market with the necessary revenues for the battery stack. And that is pretty much the same situation that you faced in the UK, right?
Yeah.
It's the same story again, and therefore I think you can also learn a lot from the UK and the experience here. Huh?
It really is the same story. So, I mean, we had saturation in GB in sort of the end of 2022. Texas ERCOT was last year. CAISO is also CAISO California is also saturated, and the NEM in Australia has kind of also saturated its frequency response services. So you kind of see this consistent story coming through of kind of batteries coming into a market, technically being the best at the frequency response side, and then moving into wholesale. So I think where you're kind of highlighting with regions like Iberia that this kind of it is kind of frequency response driven, I think there's a short termness to that, which is I think why I kind of really like your answer around Germany and this ability to be able to be in wholesale markets right up to delivery. Brings it feels like a more secure revenue stream, slightly longer term. Is that how you think about it in terms of?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, I also think that's the future, where all battery optimization, independent of the country, will go sooner or later. So markets will be optimized. Renewable driven markets with short term volatility will be optimized on a close to a real time basis by automated optimization engines, algorithms, right? And that we are seeing this already very active in countries like Germany or Belgium, and this will come sooner or later due to the other markets as well, because it's the same fundamental need that you have in a renewable system.
Mm. Agreed. And just in terms of then focusing on some of the regulatory challenges, if you kind of had this ability to move the rollout of battery faster in Europe, what would you tweak? What would you change?
If you know the challenges from the UK, I guess the ones on the continent will sound very familiar to you. I would say it's three main ones. So one is grid. Availability of grid connection. Second is the market setup, and the third one is permitting. And maybe starting with a grid. The infamous connection queue in the UK. It's very similar things happening. For example, in Germany, has also had and still have first come first serve basis of applying for grid connections, and there are now various numbers flying around how big that queue now is. There's no full transparency because there are over 800 DSOs in Germany. So you don't know, because nobody ever has taken stock of the whole applications, but it's probably north of 500 gigawatt of grid connection applications. Obviously, that number is pretty meaningless in itself, right? Because we all know this will not lead to projects, but it just shows how jammed the system is and how jammed the system is to get to these grid applications. And I think this is the number one problem that we are seeing across most of the countries. And then also questions around availability, the timing of the grid connection. So when is, once you got an answer from the grid operator, when is it available? When can you connect? And then also much around the firmness of the grid connection. So is it a flexible grid connection? Is it a firm grid connection? These topics.
I think we're starting to have that conversation on firmness of grid connection. So are you allowed to import and export in every single period for the sort of 24/7? Or are there some periods where you're limited? We are starting to have those conversations in other regions as well. Maybe just to kind of give a little bit of context around the grid queue, to ask about it in a different way. If I went to Germany today and said, right, I'd like to connect my battery to the grid on the first come, first serve basis, what might be a typical date that I would hear back in terms of when I might be able to connect?
Well, if you would ask today, the problem is that you wouldn't get an answer because some grid operators basically stopped processing new applications. So they said they will first work on the queue they have. And then it depends. We are seeing timelines of 36 months. I mean, compared to the UK, that's still relatively early.
Yes.
But we are also only at the start of that journey. Right, so with more and more application reaching a more mature status, it can be expected that this will also drag out. Sometimes some DSOs give you also late 2020s as answers, and yeah, these so very similar situation as in the UK. Yeah.
Okay. We had the slightly infamous kind of 2036, 2037 date that was very much a holding date. We'll get back to you when we're ready to. Let's move on to your second one. So market setup, what does that mean?
I mentioned Germany and Belgium, which have a pretty good setup to do a non-ancillary services optimization of the battery. But in other countries, even ancillary services are not fully opened yet. So for example, primary reserve, so that would be the equivalent of the FCR in the UK, that isn't yet a market in Iberia. It's not open in Italy. There, it's basically a mandatory provision by conventional power plants. So opening up all market segments where batteries can participate is key. And if you look, I mean, first would be obviously frequency. We discussed that. But then second, also, if you look beyond frequency services, there is a need to open these up, which is reactive, which is inertia. In Germany, you now see movements towards that. So there will be tenders for reactive power, and there are also planned tenders for synthetic inertia in Germany. But opening up these markets is something that still needs to be done in most of the countries.
So you mentioned reactive power and synthetic inertia. What do those sort of tender or market processes look like?
So at the moment, one German TSO has released a tender for reactive power in Germany. But it's expected that the other TSO will follow through and will then also set up tenders. But at the moment, I would say it's still pretty much experimenting how to set this up. And I expect then that this will also be harmonized across Germany and hopefully also then by other European countries. In Belgium, for example, we also participate already in reactive power services with the battery. So there, Elia, the TSO, is already procuring these services.
I think this is like one of the most exciting parts about batteries, because we know that batteries come into a system. We know they can provide frequency response services at lower cost than thermal assets. And so that is really exciting. And we've kind of seen that across nearly all regions, more or less. Batteries have then gone into wholesale markets and again starting to compete with gas units for kind of the kind of flexible megawatt hour at the peak. And I think that's really exciting. But this kind of third bucket of things like synthetic inertia, reactive power, the degree to which batteries can do that and lower costs of running the system for the system operators, but also for consumers, feels like one of those things that's not yet defined. If we have this conversation in 3 years' time, we'll be talking about it like, oh, it was so obvious that this was where it was going to go. That feels like where it's going. Is that kind of what you see in European markets?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing is the cost. Yes, obviously, batteries are able to provide these services cheaper than conventional plant. But the other topic is also the minimum load requirement of fossil plants in order to produce these services, right? So we are seeing in Germany, but also in Iberia, that the grid operator is redispatching, so ramping up outside of the wholesale market these conventional plants in order to produce these services. And this is obviously something that when we want to move towards a fully decarbonized power system, this shouldn't happen. And batteries are perfectly suited to do this and to do this in a CO2 neutral way. Yeah,
I totally agree. And if you want to look an example, like take a summer's day, plenty of solar, power price negative or near zero, and what you'll see is there'll be a couple of gas units that might be running, often for things like voltage control in a particular exactly. area. So yeah, expect to see more of that this summer, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to get rid of that.
Oh, 100%. And I think also good for consumers when we do, because paying large gas units to run when the wholesale market says they shouldn't tends to be quite an expensive thing to do.
Yeah. And plus it leads to negative prices, which is also important to keep in mind.
Agreed. Let's go on to your third. So permitting. What did you mean by permitting?
So permitting is a process how to get the building permit. This is something which for a lot of authorities in continental Europe is still new. You have sometimes, like in the UK, a different system depending on the size of the plant. So above 50 megawatt, this is actually a number which you don't only have in the UK, but also in some countries like Spain or Italy. You have then different permitting routes on the national and local level. And especially on the local level, we are seeing that it is always a long process to start basically explaining local authorities from the very beginning, okay, what does how does a battery look like? What impact does it have in terms of noise? That it does not have a significant risk of fire and so forth, right? So that you don't have an harmonized process, and hence there is a need to go through explanation again and again. And taking the example of Germany, where it's particularly difficult to manage the permitting. So in Germany, you currently have three different processes of getting the battery permitted, and there's no specific site size limitation, which gives you the right direction for which process you go for, and each local authority then basically has a different opinion on which is the right process and which one should be used, and that makes it, in particular in Germany, very cumbersome to get projects permitted.
Okay, so plenty of room for improvement there. I think let's move from regulation to turning these sites into revenue. So how do you go about trading different assets in different locations?
I mean, as I said in the beginning, you have similar problems in the countries. So due to the renewable transition, due to the fossil decommissioning, you face the similar problems, and hence also similar needs of the system that are then covered by either ancillary services or wholesale market. In certain countries, like for example, Germany, but also Baltics, which is a pretty fresh country to our battery portfolio. We have been early movers in basically developing this revenue stack with a large focus also on energy revenues. So moving away, because obviously with the UK experience and also with the more international experience, you could see that the capacity revenues from ancillary services will decline. So from the beginning, and that's why you also see, for example, the four-hour asset in Belgium, but also in Germany, we immediately went only for two-hour assets. So we immediately we skipped the one-hour developments, and therefore always had a very energy intensive business model. So focusing on, in Germany, on intraday, but also on AFRR energy. So basically on the activation of the AFRR reserve. And the optimization itself, we are not doing in-house. We are doing that with partners, with optimization partners. And there we see large differences in terms of maturities of that, of these optimization companies across Europe. So you have markets like Germany, but also Benelux, where you have very sophisticated battery optimizers, and you see them now now also coming to the UK. And as far as I hear, they're also quite successful in your rankings. So because how you optimize the battery in Benelux is something that where the UK market is now moving to, right? Toward a very imbalance, heavy optimization of the battery. In other markets, these companies are not yet active. And for example, Iberia, Italy are examples of markets where there's not a big field of optimizers yet, but I'm sure that this will also develop over the next year, Sam.
Okay, so very much within Germany, Benelux, UK, quite developed markets, there's sort of track record for a lot of these companies. For some of those less developed countries, from our, say, a wholesale perspective, what do you look for in terms of doing the route to market in those regions? Do you look for an optimizer or a route to market provider who has that kind of background in that particular region?
Not necessarily. I think at the moment we rather try to bring the experience from the other countries into these, so the experience from, let's say, Germany into these countries, because I think that's the easier step to do, because getting used to the local market setup, which is mainly the ancillary services setup, because the wholesale is already very similar. So setting this up from our perspective is the easier step rather than setting up an algorithmic trading setup without prior experience in these countries.
And with these assets, you're trying to develop them, operate them, and also have them financed. One of the ways that we're seeing people start to look at doing this is through the kind of floors and tolls in the market. Are you seeing a trend towards floors and tolls in the European markets?
Yeah, absolutely. And the best example for this is Germany. So in Germany, we see a large appetite from off-takers for tolls. And we just recently launched an RFP for one of our assets for a toll. And we got, I think, more than a dozen of answers from potential off-takers, all with bankable balance sheets, because that is obviously a requirement here. So the offtake interest is there. The interest from the project developers, I mean, so far, few tolls have been executed in Germany. I think just one actually has been done so far. But with project sizes increasing, we see that more and more assets will require tolls, because once projects get bigger, and we are now seeing the 50, 100 and 100 plus assets also being under construction in Germany. And therefore, also the senior lenders will want to see some secured revenues. And hence, at least a partial toll is something that I would expect to see more frequently going forward. Not only, I don't think we will move away completely from the merchant model. I think there's also a large appetite from owners, operators to have the merchant exposure, because it balances sales portfolios, because it balances renewable portfolios, or because you just want to have the merchant exposure because you like volatility. So I think there will be a room for both, but we see a larger proportion of tolls going forward. And in particular, Germany is a good market for tolls, because off-takers are more comfortable tolling wholesale revenues than ancillary services revenues, because wholesale revenues are, let's say, easier to forecast. And therefore, with markets moving more towards wholesale dominated revenue stack, we also expect that then there will be a larger amount of off-takers feeling comfortable with that exposure for 5 to 10 years.
Yes. Okay. And just to kind of just pick up a couple of bits on there. So what is the typical tenor that you're seeing on a toll?
So typical is 5. There is also 7, and some companies are going up to 10.
Okay. And then you mentioned kind of going to 100 megawatts and beyond. I think one of the things that's really interesting on the tolling side is that some of the companies you mentioned that maybe have been kind of first movers in optimizing batteries might not necessarily have been the kind of the utility players of the past. And so doing tolls that are, say, 5 or 7 years as a smaller optimizer can be quite challenging. How do you see the kind of the split between some of the sort of more legacy players who have kind of got big balance sheets and are kind of happier in the toll side to some of the innovators and the new entrants to the market who maybe have kind of less of the financial security, but perhaps more knowledge of how to do the toll?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that we are seeing as well. So the good optimizers in Germany are not necessarily the companies that have a balance sheet for a 5 to 10 year contract. Fully agree. What we are seeing is that these companies team up. So basically, you have the optimizer doing the optimization and you have other companies offering the balance sheet for the tolling contract. And I think that is a very good model because it serves both needs. And we are seeing that from a few players in Germany.
Yeah, no, I think it's really smart, to be clear. The other part you mentioned was around the portfolio risk. So people who have lots of, say, solar might be quite interested in having battery storage within their portfolio to help them with particular issues that are coming up in the market. A question on how does Aquila think about the evolving role that storage plays within helping your portfolio in the longer term? So as we go 5 and 10 years beyond today.
Yeah, so we have been doing renewables, and that is PV, wind, but also a bit of hydro in the past over since 15 years. And now since 5 years, we are doing batteries, and batteries have been the fastest growing asset class in our portfolio over the last years, and it's now the number two in terms of size in our portfolio. And we see that evolving even more because we see that renewables plus batteries will become the standard. So if we look at our renewable pipelines in Iberia, it is standard to have PV plus BESS just in order to be able to sell a product that has more value, so dispatchable green power, and that you can then offer this to customers. And this is becoming, from our perspective, the license to operate and the standard way of developing PV and to a certain extent also wind farms going forward. What we're also doing is a triple hybridization in Iberia so that we are adding wind to the PV farms and then also add batteries on top of it. So this is for us becoming the absolute standard.
Mm-hmm. I think those kind of three words, dispatchable green power, that kind of feels like where a lot of this is going on the PPA side, but also how do you get the most out of your grid connection that you have been able to get hold of in certain regions. Okay, and maybe in that tripling up, so wind, solar, and storage takes me kind of really nicely into the last question I wanted to ask, which is around the trend for co-location. So clearly you believe in co-location. I've not seen too many people do a tripling up of techs on one site. How big do you think co-location will be for Aquila's portfolio?
It really depends on the country because we see certain countries that are going more into the standalone direction, like for example, Germany. But then there are other countries like Iberia, which are pushing very much the co-location setup. We have a renewable portfolio, which is over 15 gigawatt across Europe. And obviously, from our perspective, it makes a lot of sense to utilize one connection point, because this is in the end the value of the project that is in the connection point, to utilize that for various asset classes. And therefore, we really like it. We see that in some countries, the regulation for co-location is not there yet. Like, for example, Germany, there we are then focusing more on the standalone. And if you look at the German battery pipeline, you see that this is mostly the case, that everything that is currently in construction, which is larger scale, is standalone. But for countries where it's possible, we really like the co-location approach, because we are seeing that capture price risk is one point, but then also curtailment risk. So technical curtailment, if the grid operator curtails the PV production, which is, for example, for Spain, a relevant topic, then you are to a certain extent protected with your battery. And we are seeing that a 4-hour battery in Iberia can reduce almost to zero the capture price risk of a PV plant. And that is from an investor point, obviously very helpful. But if you want to sell the power output then to a corporate off-taker, then it's obviously also very helpful, because we are now seeing already that corporate off-takers are asking for PV plus BESS off-takes. And that is then, if you look, for example, at California, it's a very similar trajectory, right? That the battery build out is basically driven by the off-taker interest in having dispatchable green power. And this is where the market, in our view, is going to. Yeah?
Totally agree. And I think people will understand capture rates, so this concept that when you have lots of solar generating at the same time, you might get a smaller portion of the revenues versus, say, the average day-ahead price. The curtailment risk that you described in Spain, that's a little bit different to other markets. How does that work?
So basically, when there is too much production in the Spanish system, the grid operator is allowed to curtail the asset. And that is a risk, because it's non-compensated in Spain. And in order to then still use that power, you can basically inject it into the battery and then dispatch it at a later time.
Yeah, it's different to other regions. In the UK, for example, you would be allowed to keep on generating to an exit price if you wanted to. And in some cases, in older subsidies, you'd still be paid for generating at negative
Indeed.
Price.
Yeah, that is actually also something which is still not harmonized across Europe.
It also creates some quite interesting things. So you'd expect Spain to have quite negative pricing just because of the solar it receives. When you look at Spanish pricing, it always kind of caps out at zero. And this is the reason behind it.
Yes, however, we try to distinguish economic curtailment and technical curtailment. So technical curtailment is really because there is an issue in the grid and the grid cannot handle it, or the grid needs to ramp up fossil production because of voltage issues. This also happens, or the grid needs to ramp up due to local congestion, which is not reflected in the national Iberian price. And the reason why you don't see very negative prices, you also see now more and more negative prices in Spain, actually. But why it's not so negative is because you don't have so much must-run generation in the grid, like, for example, in Germany or in France or in Benelux, where the PV is less steered via pricing.
Yeah, no, this is a fascinating tour across European markets. I think listeners are getting a real, real insight into how some of these markets work and how you think about it. So it's that is much appreciated. I'm going to move on to our final two questions. So the first one is there anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, I think what I would like to plug is not necessarily something around Aquila Clean Energy as a company, but more of the energy transition that we are in, because in particular in Germany, where I'm from, but I see a similar picture in other countries as well, and I think it's similar in the UK, that the energy transition is always seen as something negative. As something that takes away something, like for the Germans, obviously our petrol cars and our diesel cars, our gas boilers, our lignite mines. But what I would pitch to the listeners that that's actually not the case. That I think the system that we are moving to is better, and it's better not only because it has no CO2 in it. I think this is a nice effect as well, but also because the experience, the reduced local emissions for the customers is something that will make our societies in the end better. And I think that's the message I wanna transmit, that the system we are moving to is actually, it's good and it's better.
Oh, I totally agree. We have a wonderful snippet for the episode. moving on to your contrarian view. So something that you believe that the majority of the market doesn't.
I think what I believe in for the UK, it might not be so contrarian anymore, because I heard that soon, actually in Q2, there will be potentially also changes on this here. But in Germany, it's still a pretty big red flag. And I've been working in the energy industry for 15 years. And in the past, it always has been something that in Germany you couldn't discuss. And this is the zonal pricing. But I think we will need zonal pricing also in Germany. And very slowly, the German energy industry is moving or is realizing that this is really needed. And therefore, I'm sure that this is also a topic where the UK is again leading a bit the pack. But I'm sure that in 2 years' time, we will have a similar discussion on zonal pricing in Germany as well, because we need it for the proper dispatching of the assets. At the moment, assets don't receive the correct price signals to dispatch because they do not include the network constraints. And hence, I think not only for batteries, but also for smart charging of EVs, for demand response of big industries, it's essential to have the proper dispatching signals. And therefore, we will need to move towards zonal pricing also in Germany. And the big benefit of it is that with a northern zone in Germany, you would have a zone that has more than 90% of renewable power, and that under EU rules actually allows you to produce hydrogen, green hydrogen with grid power. And I think that's a massive benefit that is often overlooked when looking at zonal prices in Germany.
I think it's a super interesting topic, and yes, I can reassure you, it's still contrarian in GB. I would say, yeah, so Q2, we should get a bit more information, and then depending on who you are and what you believe, the speed of rollout, anything from 3 years to 6 years in terms of actually getting that implemented. So yeah, it's the debate is rolling on.
But do you think it will come?
So for my money, I think it will. I spend a lot of time looking at battery dispatch, probably way too much time looking at battery dispatch. And so I see instances where a national price and then a locational balancing mechanism price give different signals. And so I can see for batteries, it's really hard to know which way you're supposed to be charging and discharging. And that can be quite complicated. And that's because the constraints get fed into the balancing mechanism, but they don't get fed into the wholesale market.
Yeah.
And so I see that as a real problem. I do recognize issues on both sides, but from what I see, I think a zonal system would help. We shall see where it all ends up.
Fully agree.
Okay. Killian, thank you very much for coming on. You've been a fantastic guest. We'd love to have you on again soon.
Thanks a lot, Ed. Great to be here.